This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. COVID-19 is not only endangering people's health, but also attacking their livelihood. Small businesses are the backbone of our country, and they're facing a threat of being wiped out by this pandemic. The challenge now for many small businesses is they are unable to get loans. So joining me to give a breakdown on how small businesses can get loans they need is Cook County Commissioner of the 7th District, Alma Anaya. Thanks for joining me, Alma.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so before we start, I really have to know, what defines a small business? Is it a number of people employed, or is it about the amount of money you make a year?
You know, it varies a lot. The different programs and grants that are out there have different criteria. So typically, when we're talking about a small business, we might be talking about the mom and pop shop. So in even smaller chain companies, hairstylists, barbers, musicians, home care workers, and others. At the federal level, is actually up to 500 employees. They include nonprofits in some of their initiatives, some also that are independently owned or operated. And here locally, in Chicago, it is classified as, those businesses that employ less than 50 people. Sometimes the requirement is like 50% of them must be Chicago residents, less than $3 million. At the county, it's fewer than 25 employees and less than $3 million in revenue. So it really does vary based on, what entity of government you're talking about and the type of program that we're looking at.
Okay, so specifically the program I'm thinking of or I'm speaking about is the stimulus package. And I'm not even sure what exactly it's called. You hear it's called the Paycheck Protection Program or the Small Business Stimulus Package, or it's the Coronavirus Small Business Loans. What is this called?
So there's two programs. The one that you're referring to is from the U.S. Small Business Administration, and it's called the Paycheck Protection Program, which is the PPP that you just mentioned. This program is a loan designed to provide the direct incentives for the small businesses to keep their workers on payroll. So that's one program. The U.S. Small Business Administration has this other program called Economic Injury Disaster Loan Emergency Advance, and that one is also an advance up to $10,000 of economic relief for the small businesses. So it may be referred as different things, but most people are talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. And that's the one that has this forgivable, quote-unquote, component to it, and it applies to a lot of the small businesses that would be probably interested here in the Chicagoland area for applying.
Okay, now that that's all taken care of, we're going to talk about a hot topic here. How come Ruth Chris, we got Potbellies, Shake Shack, Harvard, all these people were able to get PPP loans? So how did that happen? Are these small businesses, how did they get into the cracks of the law?
Right. So obviously that's concerning to a lot of folks, including myself. They consider themselves independently owned as quote unquote contractors, then they might be applying under their immediate owner. This obviously is a problem because a lot of smaller companies and the mom and pop shops are the ones that really need the relief at the moment. So I can't fully answer that. I'm not really sure. That's definitely a loophole that they've been able to get around. And I think that since most of the government geared programs geared to small businesses are for those small and mom and pop shops, I think this is definitely very concerning. And it could be looked at as, a bailout or some type of privilege that they have. But it's important that our small businesses really do develop relationships with their chambers and ask questions with the government entities so that they're also able to apply for these programs that would really benefit them in the long run.
Now, I've owned businesses in the past, and some of the paperwork involved in getting yourself certified, it's like a mountain of paperwork, and you probably need a team of lawyers to get through it really fast. And that's how I'm thinking they were able to get these loans super fast, as they had the money to push themselves through.
Because resources.
Exactly.
No, absolutely. And you're right. Most small businesses don't have that access to the attorneys or don't have access to the information and the resources. So that's why it's very crucial that government entities, you know, partner up with chambers and other non-for-profit organizations, because they're the ones that know the communities. They're the ones that know the small businesses and the ones that are being directly impacted. And, you know, to the small business owners, I say to them, you know, it is a very daunting task. It's something very difficult applying and looking at, you know, what is more beneficial for them to apply for and what type of resources and help that is out there. But I think that we definitely need to help our small businesses get the information and help them apply and really develop that relationship. At the county, we have developed a program to help with technical assistance, and we definitely encourage other entities and other local governments to do the same.
Now, when it comes to that, and right now we have all this social distancing, is it an email or like a phone number? Because personally for me, I love talking to a real person. I don't like waiting for an email.
Right. So there's different ways. The way that the county has approached it is that they are doing webinars. So that's something that's available that people can, you know, see the person that they're talking to. They're getting the information directly to them. And it is also like having the phone numbers available so that people can help. The technical assistance at the county is available for anybody or any of the small businesses in Cook County. So it does help a lot of the folks that really are trying to navigate through the different programs and also trying to navigate. Obviously, a lot of them might still be open or might still have essential services that they're providing. So therefore, you know, they're managing a business while also trying to apply for any of the help and relief that is out there. So again, I'll repeat, it is a daunting task. And that's why we're trying to make sure that the small businesses get the information to their hands, that it's in a, you know, that digestible manner, and that we're able to help them follow through with anything that they decide to do or any type of loan or grant programs that they want to apply for.
I'm glad you said grants or loans, because why is some companies and businesses are able to get grants and some can't, or there some can get loans and others can't?
Again, each loan is different. Each grant is different. So there are different requirements that will allow, depending on the program the business is applying or the business owner is applying to. So for example, the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP that we just mentioned, that one, the loan is fully forgivable if the funds are used for payroll costs, interest on mortgage, rent, or utilities, specifically dealing with their business. So if this business actually, you know, uses the funds for these purposes, then it is forgivable. It looks like, you know, there's sometimes that, you know, the payments are deferred either 6 months, but if they are being paid for those types of things, then it really does help. The other, you know, aspect of that is that the forgiveness is really based on the employers maintaining or quickly rehiring a lot of their employees or maintaining the salary levels. So, you know, some of the small businesses might have not known that there's that little type of criteria. So if they weren't able to pay, you know, salaries during this time and maybe let go of a few people and didn't hire them quickly, then obviously they would be disqualified. But this really all goes back to making sure that the businesses have the information and the criteria, and they know, you know, what they're getting themselves into, and really understanding, you know, the small print, for lack of a better word, of the program that they're applying for.
Now, what about the people who are just a contractor that they hide behind an LLC because, you know, if they ever get sued, the company gets sued and not their house won't be taken? Would those people be able to apply for a PPP?
So I'm not quite sure about the LLCs, but I do know that at the federal level, 1099 contractors or independent workers do qualify for this, I should say. Also, self-employed people can apply. And also the gig workers, which are, you know, your Uber drivers, your Amazon delivery folks. We know that the gig industry has grown a lot, but they've also seen themselves impacted greatly. So then they also qualify. In most programs, and I'm going to talk about, you know, the county one specifically, also has that criteria where it does help independent contractors. Again, you know, the LLC, I'm not really sure of, like, the technicalities behind that. For a fact, I know that gig workers and 1099 independent contractors and self-employed individuals do qualify.
Now, what happens if they don't meet that criteria for the loan to be forgiven? What would it be like to pay it back?
Each of the programs is very different. So, for example, I know that at the federal level, I'm not really sure what that criteria would be. I know for the city, it does claim that they do have an interest rate. So it says that, you know, for about 7 to 12 months, there's the interest-only payments, and then after month 13, there is a monthly principal and interest payment. So each of them is very different. In regards to repayment, again, they really need to look at the program that they're applying for and then really getting through the nitty-gritty and fine print with partnering up again with the not-for-profits, the Chamber of Commerce, who have become a little bit more versed on the type of things that can happen, and really knowing what fits, you know, their criteria, what they're looking for, and being able to get that spelled out for them.
I heard they're going to put more money into the PPP program. So now that we know what to expect, everybody's going to be jumping on it, including big corporations and big companies. What can you do as a small business owner to get there first?
Yeah, I mean, this definitely happened the first round, right? So a lot of our small businesses didn't have the information on time to be able to apply. So, you know, I'm encouraging the small businesses, again, to get connected with the government agencies, you know, to either make an appointment or have a phone conversation with the chambers or the smaller SSAs, et cetera, locally to be able to get that information. Because the chambers, because the non-for-profit organizations and the government agencies have a better hold on the information, and, you know, they've been working very diligently to be able to dissect it and understand it, I think it's important that they build that relationship and really say, you know, I'm interested in applying for this. It's very important because I've heard multiple times from small businesses that went straight to the bank and, you know, they applied and then it looks like the lending entity didn't apply on time for that business. So then they lost out because, the PPP program drained out there fairly quickly. So it's important, again, to build that, start having that conversation with the lending companies, but with the chambers, and most importantly, and with the government entities.
So between now and then, when more money gets put into PPP, what can small businesses do to stay afloat?
You know, that's a really good question. I think that is something that we ponder, again, we work with our partners to figure out how do we help the entities. You know, at the county level, I know we have to, you know, we're telling folks there are still opportunities to get loans or other opportunities here locally. So, you know, with the city of Chicago, with the county. So if the business still is open and the business is seeing like they are going to need additional assistance to apply for these opportunities, obviously, you know, it's a scary thing to apply for something and, you know, again, figure out the paperwork. But we are trying to provide as much technical assistance, even in different languages, to make sure that people have the information and the small business owners feel like they are, you know, being taken care of in many ways. So while we're waiting for the federal government to act, you know, we're trying to act here at the state and at the local governments to make sure that our small businesses have the support that they need to keep afloat in the meantime.
Now, another important thing that's happening right now is the census. And I always get excited about this. I don't know why. I think it's because it doesn't happen every year. And I did it for my parents. I did it for myself. But why is it important to do the census?
I also get excited about this topic. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Complete Census Count Commission at the county level. And, you know, the more I learn about the census, the more I get excited because, yes, it only happens every 10 years, but it does impact us for 10 years. So if we're not alert, if we're not, you know, getting counted, what ends up happening is we're losing out on very valuable resources and representation. What I mean by resources, I am talking about our schools, I'm talking about our health systems, you know, our RIC programs, you know, our streets, our highways, a lot of funding that comes into the state and into, you know, municipalities really have to do with the population and the data that's collected with the census. So we only have this one opportunity every 10 years to get all of our communities counted, all of our, you know, residents and children and elderly, everybody counted so that we can get those resources. It's estimated that each person is worth about $14,000. So imagine one family not getting counted. It can really create really big problems with the funding that's coming in locally, again, for those that very valuable resources that I just mentioned. The second part, representation. Due to the loss of population in Illinois, we're going to lose one congressional seat. So that means one less voice in Washington. But if we do not have accurate, a full count of all of the residents living here in the state of Illinois, we could potentially lose two congressional seats. Now that's two less voices in Washington. and that can really create some problems for us. The information that's collected from the census also gives us a good understanding of the, you know, the maps and how the maps and representation will also happen at the, you know, the state, you know, representative seats or the state senate seats, you know, county commissioners, aldermen. There's a lot of neighborhoods that don't have full representation. And my favorite example that I like to use is the Back of the Yards neighborhood. They have so many different aldermen that represent that neighborhood, so many state representatives. And it's very hard to have, you know, the representation that's needed for a neighborhood, for an area, you know, they're split in so many ways. So, you know, the census gives us a great opportunity for us to show that the community is present, that the community is lively, you know, that there's a variety of people living there, different ages, different ethnicities and backgrounds. And it really is, a secure way to show presence. And again, you know, it's this one chance we get every 10 years for all of those benefits. So it's definitely something that, you know, I encourage everybody to look into, fill out. It's a quick, you know, survey. It takes, anywhere between, it took me less than 5 minutes, but I know for some people say that typically it takes them about, you know, anywhere between 7 to 10 minutes.
$14,000 per person. That explains the really stern postcards. It looked like you were going to go to jail if you didn't fill out the census report.
Yeah, you know, most of the government entities really do rely on that for a lot of the social service programs that we have. So a lot of the things that we're using now in the middle of a, you know, global pandemic, you know, the social services, the food assistance or any type of other assistance really do come from that. So we re-encourage a lot of people and all of our neighbors to make sure that we have a full and accurate count. You know, so far, Illinois is doing a bit good overall in compared to other states in getting counted. But Cook County, specifically some of our districts, you know, they don't trust giving their information. But we know that, you know, this is confidential. It's a safe way to get counted. And again, the resources that come into our neighborhood are very beneficial.
Now, I know Illinois is a sanctuary state. How can you document undocumented people without a Social Security? Or do you still count them?
Yeah. So, you know, based on the U.S. Constitution, it asks for a count of all people living in the United States. So it doesn't specify, you know, all citizens or all residents. It just specifies all people. That's why we count children. That's why we count everybody. So, it has never been something that, before the 1970s, the quote-unquote citizenship question wasn't on there. And, you know, we're supposed to count anyone regardless. So everybody is able to participate. This is the one way that everybody's counted, and that, again, children are counted, everybody, it needs to be part of the census. For obvious reasons, there's fears, fear from immigrant communities. The administration, the Trump administration has made it his mission to target immigrant communities, and that's why there are fears. That's why there are undercounts. But again, if there's undercounts of any people, any individual, you know, the whole state suffers as a whole. So it's very important that everybody is counted, regardless of their immigration status.
Well, Alma, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. And for those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You know, they can call my office at 773-376-2700 if they have any questions on anything that I've discussed. Or they can go to my website at www.commissioneranaya.com. And Anaya is spelled A-N-A-Y-A. Remember that Commissioner has two M's and two S's. They can also find me on Facebook, Commissioner Alma E. Anaya, or Twitter as well.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.